Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Are you a psychotherapist looking to enhance your practice? The Awareness Integration Therapy developed by Dr. Fujian Zeng is a comprehensive guide to the principles and techniques of this powerful therapeutic approach. Join the growing community who have elevated their practice and expanded their skills by embracing Awareness Integration Therapy and witnessing its life-changing impact. Order your copy on Amazon now.
Do you wish to wake up one day and hit the Life Reset button? Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fujian Zeng, helps you navigate crucial life areas, heal the past traumas, and cultivate fulfilling relationships and careers. Life Reset is your guide to a profound journey to reshape your life. Grab your copy on Amazon or Audible now and embark on a path to a more joyous and fulfilled life.
Welcome to The Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Fujian Zeng, a psychotherapist, an author, and the creator of the Awareness Integration Theory. I'm so thrilled to have you join us today for what promises to be truly an insightful discussion. In this episode, I chat with Robert Diltz, the founder of Diltz Strategy Group. He has a global reputation as a leading coach, behavioral skills trainer, and a business consultant since the late 1970s. Robert has been a developer and author, trainer, and consultant in neuro-linguistic programming, NLP, a model of human behavior and learning and communication, and has provided coaching, consulting, and training worldwide to various individuals and organizations. In May 2018, Robert was honored with a Lifetime Contribution Award by the Association of Neuro-Linguistic Programming. He is the co-developer of the Success Factor Modeling, a process and a method to identify and transfer the critical success factors necessary to promote effective entrepreneurial activities within both new and traditional companies by analyzing crucial patterns of business practices and behavioral skills used by successful individuals, teams, and companies. Robert has authored numerous books and articles about success factor modeling, including Next Generation Entrepreneurship, Success Factor Modeling, Volume 1, Generative Collaboration, Success Factor Modeling, Volume 2, and Conscious Leadership and Resilience, Success Factor Modeling, Volume 2. Robert Diltz is also a co-founder of the International Association of Generative Change. With Dr. Stephen Gilligan, the purpose of the IAGC is to bring principles of generative change to multiple professions throughout the world. Today, we will be discussing his latest book, Sleight of Mouth, Volume 2, How Words Can Change Your World. You may find his workshops for public about this book, Sleight of Mouth, Volume 2, at NLP, www.nlpu.com. I really enjoy our conversation. Every time I've gone to his workshops and see him in conferences, I always learn a lot. And today I learned a lot, and I hope that you do. We talked about language. We talked about how language affects, even with the filter of listening to other people's language affects you, and how you could really look at the context of where you're coming, how you're listening, how you're talking, and how that impacts your life in every single relationship, especially with, you know, all that we hear right now through social media, in public, in politics, in every realm, how we are impacted consistently by what we hear. In this book, he wants to make sure that you've got the right filters that works for you and that is useful for you. I really learned a lot, and I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast, my YouTube channel, and connect with me through my website, fujianzeng.com, at any of my social media platforms. Share your thoughts with me. I'd love to hear from you. Now, without further ado, here's Robert.
Intentional Parenting, a Practical Guide to Awareness Integration Theory, written by Dr. Jafari, Dr. Fujian Zeng, and Dr. Manukyan, three experts in human development is your step-by-step guide to raising a healthy child prepared for a culturally integrated world. You're supported in parenting infants to adolescents using the latest evidence-based scientific research on parenting. Order your copy on Amazon now.
Eliminate stress, reduce anxiety, and decrease depression. Dr. Fujian Zane's Awareness Integration Theory has helped thousands like you get incredible life-changing results. The Fujian app gives you her evidence-based treatment in the palm of your hand. Download today.
I am so excited to have Robert Diltz with us today. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
Great pleasure, Fujian. I'm very excited about this as well. Looking forward to this.
I've known you for so long. I come to every evolution of psychotherapy or anything that any of the conferences that Ericksonian, the Milton Erickson Foundation puts in, and you're there. I always learn from you. I run to your conferences. Usually the room is packed and you are up there walking, teaching, and creating excitement with the information that you offer. And I think it's such a breath of fresh air every time that I come and see you. So I just wanted to share that with you.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad that it has that kind of impact.
Yes. So today we're going to talk about your new book, which is a volume two of a book that you've had before, Sleight of Mouth, volume two, yes. How Words Can Change Worlds. And I know that your first book, Sleight of the Mouth, it's been really successful in, to sharing all of that. What brought this incentive to have volume two? What's the difference?
Yeah, thank you. That's a great question. And, so I wrote volume one. I realized that was published 25 years ago. So it's been 25 years. And so why after 25 years, volume two? And I think first of all, just the whole idea of sleight of mouth, what that means is, it's obviously a play on words. It's a play on the term sleight of hand, which means, where you use physical dexterity to do some kind of create an illusion. That's what sleight of hand is about. Sleight of mouth is sort of similar, that you can create this idea of creating worlds through words. Is that, the way in which we talk about something, the kind of language that we use will determine the way that we perceive something. And, I think more and more, especially, since in the last 25 years, 25 years ago, the internet was just barely starting. We did not really have any kind of social media. Today, you've got we're deluged with all kinds of information coming from all kinds of different places. And we live more and more in a world of what I would call a sort of groundless reality. And what I mean by groundless reality is we have all this information. Sometimes we have to make decisions about things and we have no direct experience of it. And especially, when we have these possibilities of things like, deep fake, we're caught in these algorithmic bubbles where we're just fed more and more of the same stuff that we already think. We kind of create these realities that, can become a trap for us. And in particular, we see with a lot of, you can see it with polarization in politics, with divisiveness between, different countries and nations, that language can be incendiary. It can create conflict. It can create violence. I mean, language can also create healing. It can create, a transformation. And so it just seemed to me that this was a time when it's really important that we become more attuned to that power that language can have. And so what this sleight of mouth is about is there are these 14 patterns of ways of using language that it's the way that you sort of, we call it verbal reframing, right? It shifts your perspective one way or another. And one of the things I put into this volume two, especially, is a series of what I would call sort of red flags. That is, what to pay attention to as you're getting these information that are, it's not just information, that is also used to create beliefs and belief systems. And that's another aspect of sleight of mouth. It's the volume one was titled, you know, The Magic of Conversational Belief Change. And so sleight of mouth is about these language relating to beliefs. So I wanted to put this out because I think it's important that people kind of have, in the same way that a computer, for instance, has a virus detector, we should have a thought virus detector, if you will. And so part of what I'm doing with the book is showing what kinds of ways of using these words can create problems, what kinds of ways of using the words is going to be more solution oriented.
That's beautifully put. As I'm listening to you, I know that in our world of, you know, doing psychotherapy,
right,
it's a lot of working with belief systems and changing the, you know, reframing how we think and the way we've thought, usually through the language of what we've gotten from our parents, school systems, you know,
exactly,
and community, and how those belief systems through the wordings have kind of either moved us forward or scarred us or traumatized us. Even our traumas, sometimes the verbal traumas are just words, but then
exactly
inside of us, it impacts us in such a way. And we usually have reframed all of those. But there's a different way of looking at how I perceive these information and how I process it inside. And I'm sensing that right now, because there's this other level that you're saying, it's important for us not to only receive and see what happens inside of me, but also recognize that the way that someone uses that pattern, whether we're using it, you know, we use it in marketing, we use it in so many other levels where
exactly
we want to enroll people into some idea. So we use a particular way of doing, or professional talk, or, you know, or politically correct ways of putting things. So we use language in a softening or being intimidating and all of it.
Right.
Adding this other filter, which is, can you also listen from that perspective? Not only you're using it, but also listen
to that
filter.
Yes, exactly. You know, and again, I think filter is a good word, because, you know, language creates a filter, first of all, you know, so that the words we use are a type of a filter, you know, so as I describe something, I'm filtering out, you know, and I'm sort of foregrounding some things. Other things are fading into the background. So there's, in this book, I talk about these patterns, but I also talk about that there's a set of principles for applying them. There's a set of skills for applying them. And then there's a set of strategies for applying them. So for instance, you know, we were mentioning, well, how do we use language? Well, we use language to persuade. We use language to motivate. We use language to make decisions. So, you know, we're using language in many, many different ways. And so, again, I would say that one of the principles is that we would say energy follows attention. Language directs attention. And then language also frames our experience. So, you know, and again, depending upon how I frame something is going to determine its meaning and its impact. And yeah, I think this ability to learn to listen for, well, how is this, what, you know, where is my attention being drawn by the way that something is being described? And one of the fundamental principles, by the way, is this notion that, you know, language is not it's not just information. It also can create an inner state, like you were saying. It's going to impact me. And one of the terminologies I use is that you're going to often have going towards either what we call more of a coach state or more of a crash state. And this is a coach is an acronym. It's an acronym that's for being, if I'm more centered, I'm more open, I'm more aware and alert, I'm more connected, I'm able to sort of hold what's happening from a place of curiosity. Whereas crash is, I'm more contracted, I'm more reactive, I'm more caught in sort of analysis paralysis, I'm more separated, I'm more hostile. And so it's very important to notice, is the way in which I'm talking about something creating more of this resourcefulness or more of this kind of hostility, this kind of, you know, let's say, you know, taking us down the rabbit hole. And so I think these are some really important things to be able to notice. You know, it is the quality of what we're, you know, of how, the way that we're speaking, bringing us more towards some kind of resourceful creativity solution, or is it sort of just taking us into more and more divisiveness, destructiveness, aggression, etc.?
Interesting. I just had this experience this morning. I teach at Cal State Long Beach two classes that are about drugs and health.
Yes.
I have created like this an assignment that I was not very clear in explaining all of the matters of assignment, right? So some of the students were having confusion and like, what is this assignment and how come I'm getting half a credit instead of full credit and all of that? And one of the students was trying to clarify things, but in a very hostile level, and hostility and putting it out there with all of the students. And it was interesting because I'm taking full responsibility that I didn't communicate very well, all of that. But when you shared about where is our energy goes and where does our language goes,
I kept
going into the space of the hostility that was coming, and I was framing it as an attack versus, okay, this person is angry and how I can soothe them.
Yes.
Watching both sides of me.
Yes.
At it, you know, one part being offended and I needed, you know, kind of like myself in that way. And another part wanting to care for her and all of them. And these both parts were dealing with different angles of her conversation.
Exactly. Yeah.
And, you know, added together. And at one point I also saw that as I was sharing my, like, I'm sorry that this is happening for you, and, you know, I can do it this way, that I was also coming across as, you know, my love and understanding was coming across as, oh, there's a weakness here where the other person can kind of like perpetrate more like that way. And it's like this balance of how am I loving and powerful versus loving and showing up as I'm bringing myself down. So this delicateness of how the process that happens within us, and then how do we communicate that through words? It's such an important factor. Can you share a little bit with this unpacking of what I just kind of like?
Well, first of all, I think what's great is being able to have that level of awareness is so important. What we would call that, and it's one of the other sort of principles here, is this notion of what we would call a meta position, a meta awareness, you know, metacognition, which means I'm aware of myself. So yeah, the fact that I have these two parts, if I'm not aware of them, I'm just in one part or the other part, you know, so I'm kind of caught in my own, you know, my own sort of cycle. But if I can have that sort of awareness, then I can begin to say, oh, that's interesting, you know, and I then begin to have a choice. And I think that's what's key here, is developing the degree of awareness that's necessary to be able to actually choose. You know, my background is in this field, neuro-linguistic programming, right? And linguistic is very much about the language aspect. But what's sort of the principle there is, whatever of our own programming, if you will, that we're not aware of, it seems like it's our reality. You know, it just is that way. There is no choice if I'm not aware. I think it was Carl Jung that says that wherever we don't have consciousness appears to us outwardly as fate, you know, as destiny, and we don't have a choice. But by being able to develop that awareness, then you actually have that ability to say, oh, well, I have this reaction going on, but I want to be able to be in this way. But if I'm too much this way, then I'm opening myself to attack. So that is already, you know, just fantastic. And I like what you said. It's like being able to unpack, you know, our own experience And what that really gives, as I said, is this dimension where now I can, I'm in charge of my life. I can choose the way that I want to be. It's not that I'm just reacting to this person's hostility, that because then they're in charge, right? It's their hostility that's the thing that's in charge rather than me. And I think that that was just, it's just such a great example. And it's a good example of why I wanted to put this book out.
You talked about neurolinguistic, and I think a lot of people are interested in that. And you have created a neurolinguistic programming university.
Yes.
You're, when I, as I've followed you for so many years and I've watched your work, it's gone into so many different beautiful layers. You also, with Dr. Stephen Gilligan.
Gilligan, yes.
You know, adore him also.
yes.
I've watched it, you guys have created the International Association of Generative Change together.
Yes.
And the concept of coach and crash, also I've read it in your books together in that realm. Can you share a little bit about why neurolinguistic programming is so important? And in the way that I've watched you share about how to bring this into creating a successful life, not only successful businesses, but, you know, in successful communication, in successful relationships. And as I've watched you, you're one person who's always moving your body, and your body is gearing, and you're gearing your body, and you're using full body, not only in shifting your own state, but also to communicate fully.
Yes. Yeah.
And I see that all as part of the NLP. Can you share a little bit about that dynamic?
Sure. Yes. Well, first of all, of course, you know, NLP, so that the neuro part has to do with our nervous system. And one thing, as you were just pointing out, the nervous system doesn't stop at the neck, right? It goes through the body. And there is, our intelligence is not just in the head. Yes, there is a cognitive intelligence. But with Dr. Gilligan, we also like to talk about the notion of a somatic intelligence, right? There's a somatic intelligence is, there is an intelligence in the body that you get access to by, you know, by moving. And so one of the things that we do in the generative change work is, you know, we say that there is, you know, there is body, of course, we all know there's body language, but that body language is also a stimulus for a kind of also of intelligence. And so oftentimes if somebody's talking about something, we'll say something like, can you, you know, show that with your body? If somebody says, oh, you know, I'd like to have more freedom. Well, show me what that would look like with your body. Oh, it might look like this. And so I think activating that gives you more connection to more possibilities. And it's in the this idea of generative change means you're able to creatively, I mean, generativity is typically about creativity. It's a particular kind of creativity, which means it's something that I'm doing that I haven't done before, right? It's something that's new. And we like to point out that in our today's world, you know, as we think about just having gone through, you know, years of pandemics where we had to change things, we have new technologies where we have to deal with new issues, new problems. So we need to be creative in this way. And certainly one of the most important accesses to that creativity is through our body. So that's sort of the neuro part. And then of course we've been talking about the linguistics and how verbal language and the, you know, body language together are even, you know, sort of more impactful, both for ourselves, but also for others. And then of course the idea of programming is that we're putting these things together in different ways. You know, as we were just talking about in terms of language, the way in which I'm talking about something is determining how I'm perceiving it, which is going to determine how I react to it. And again, this idea that if I am not aware of that programming, I'm essentially just reacting. I have less choice. If I'm aware of that programming, then I'm able to determine, you know, is this the program I want? Is this the direction I want to keep going? And if not, what can I do about it? So we, So in the generative change work, we talk about these three intelligences: cognitive intelligence, the somatic intelligence, and then what we would call a field intelligence. Field intelligence is interesting because the idea of a field means it's something that is generated through my interaction. So in other words, between us right now, Fujian, there is a kind of a field where I'm thinking things and, you know, having responses because of questions that you asked that I would have never thought of without this interaction. And that as we develop a kind of a connection and rapport, there's another intelligence that's not just my intelligence or your intelligence. It's sort of our intelligence that sort of emerges out of this. And I think that's where we say that things can become very generative, is through that sort of quality of interaction. So I think this is important today because we, you know, how do we say, you know, a lot of our old solutions are clearly not working. You know, the old ways of doing things are not working. We've got, you know, problems with climate. We've got problems with, you know, aggression between nations and between, you know, political parties. We need to do something new and different. And I think this is what something like generative change in NLP can give us more insight into.
So when let me first of all share the book.
Yes.
Light of Mouth 2, How Words Can Change Worlds.
Yes.
So as you as we look at the condition that the world is, and one of the things is the social media, where it starts with something, and then, you know, with all of the everybody having the ability to share and put something in it, like you said, it just, you know, explodes in a certain way. And unfortunately, because it explodes in that way, it appears to be true, not necessarily that it is, but if you're consistently hearing the same thing over and over again, and it's coming at you because of the algorithms that come back at you, for some reason, it appears that, oh, if I hear it long enough, if I hear it from other people, other people agree with it, then it
exactly
to be true.
Yeah.
So when you're sharing about the filters of having, and what is it that I'm really looking at, and how can I separate this concept?
Yes.
You know, as it just comes at me in every, and it's funny because if social media just explodes with something, then the respectable media at this point also goes and picks it up as news and then, you know, states it to us. At one point, we're not even sure anymore if, you know, where is this new idea or the news is coming, because now it's all intertwined. Like, not only that some people are journalists, now everybody's a journalist.
Right.
And get enough hoopla, you know, and hype around that.
Yes.
For some reason, you know, you create credibility for yourself. As you were sharing about this book, you know, giving us the listening skills, that language also. What do you suggest?
Well, so I think this, first of all, this is exactly what I was talking about, this idea of groundless reality, where, okay, I hear this is all the stuff is coming. I don't have my own direct experience. I'm getting like secondhand, thirdhand experience. And as you say, reality then, because I can't ground it in my own personal experience, it's then more how much does it resonate with anybody else's, right? So that, as you say, the more people that seem to agree with it, then that makes it real, whether or not it's actually, you know, physically real or not. And in some ways, one of the points I make is that at a certain level, then reality is not so much the important thing. It's what is it creating? You know, it's not so much is it real about the present or the past, is it what is it creating in the future? What is it creating in me? So, and this is what beliefs are about, by the way, because first of all, when we believe in something, it's not only about that I believe that it is happening or did happen, it's that it could happen. So beliefs are actually how we create our future. You know, if I don't believe something is possible, if I don't believe it's desirable, if I don't think I can do it, I'm not even going to try. So I always like to point out, you know, I have to believe that I can make a flying machine before I make a flying machine, you know. So the belief is something that actually becomes self-fulfilling. So to go to your question then, it starts by being aware of, okay, what if this language is directing attention, and that attention is going to then create, it's going to create the reality that I'm experiencing and I'm living in, what kind of reality is it creating? So one of the first principles, Pujan, would be what we would call, is it oriented toward in a, what we call a problem frame or an outcome frame? So you were talking about this conversation you were having with your student. The student, their language is all directed towards a problem frame. This went wrong, you know, the problem frame is, what's wrong? Whose fault is it? Why did it go wrong? What is, you know, what bad things did it create? An outcome frame is, what do we want then? What do you want instead? How can you get it? What resources are available? And so, and that's like what I call a red flag. It doesn't mean that it's right or wrong, but it means if I only stay in that problem frame, there's never going to be a solution. it's not solution oriented. A second kind of a red flag would be something like, it kind of goes along with that. Am I assuming a negative intention? Negative intention means, you know, you are intentionally wanting to do something harmful. In NLP, in neurolinguistic programming, there's a principle of what we call positive intention. Positive intention means that, okay, even if something is coming out in a harmful way, there's usually some kind of positive intention behind it. A positive intention of aggression, for example, is something like protection or safety. Now, the key is, and this is where coach versus crash comes in, a positive intention coming through a crash state, you know, will come out as something like, you know, like say this student, if they want to, they're trying to whatever, protect themselves or, you know, something, it's going to come out as blame. And so, but it doesn't mean that that's necessarily their intention. But if I start assuming that somebody has a negative intention, and then on top of that, one of the other red flags is negative identity judgment. So, because somebody could say, hey, well, you know, that you didn't explain that properly, or, you know, you're bad, or, you know, you're wrong. So if you start collecting these red flags, and you'll start hearing, okay, it's problem frame, it's away from something as opposed to towards a solution. There's an assumption of a negative intention. There's a negative identity judgment. Then you start realizing, wow, this is just piling on these things that's what's going to take us down that rabbit hole. So, all right, how do I switch from the negative intention to a positive intention, from the problem frame to an outcome frame, from away from to towards? And it was very interesting because even in your own, when you were describing that, you're describing sort of one part of me is in this problem frame, you know, you talking to me, and the other one is, okay, let's find out what's a solution here. Where can we go towards? And then I think being able to have that awareness and then saying, okay, I choose this one. I'm going to choose this. But I was thinking maybe as one other bit here in the generative change work, we talk about the importance of these three archetypal energies. One is sort of strength or fierceness. And that's the part of, you know, you talking to me. Then the other is softness, right? Or gentleness, you know, sort of, you know, one is more yang, one is more yin, you know. And then the third is playfulness. And your big part of it, of successfully dealing with a situation, any situation, but the one you were talking about, for example, is I've got to have some, you know, I've got to have some of the strength here. Otherwise, you're vulnerable. But I've also got to have the, you know, the openness, softness. And then it could be interesting, you know, say, okay, how can I bring in a little playfulness? And that's also where language comes in. And by the way, one of the things that I point out in the book is that the patterns themselves, these verbal patterns, are not simply a linguistic recipe. They come from taking on a certain mindset, and the mindset will naturally generate the language. So actually the words start with, that's what we'd say neurolinguistic. It starts with a mindset that will naturally bring that in. So it's like what you were doing is saying, okay, I've got to get, what's the mindset that I really want to have with this person? And then that's going to bring the solution.
You talked about playfulness, and it dawned on me. I've been listening to A Well-Lived Life. This doctor explains that, she was working with patients, and in a grocery store, yeah. The patient shows up and starts talking about very much of a personal, gynecological concepts in the middle of the grocery store for somebody's hearing. And so the doctor keeps trying to shift and revert, but this patient was so adamant about explaining all of it. And at one point she said, I just said, all right, why don't you just lay down here and bring your legs up and let me just examine you. And then we're just right here, well, you're explaining it right here, or would you rather come tomorrow to the office? The humor that I just brought into it. Brought the concept of, this is not the right setting, or the boundary is.
Yes, that's a great example.
Such a playfulness that, kind of like shifted the whole thing. When you were sharing, it dawned on me of, we started the conversation that the incentive about the book came from all that we hear and, where is all of that? But at the other side of it, as you were explaining, this is what we do every day in relationships, is we only have the virtue of our language to share with others. This is the only way we connect. So whether it's our intimate relationship, marriages, relationship with our work and coworkers, or, customers or clients, or, anyone around us. I mean, we're in relationships all day consistently, or with ourselves in the dialogue that we have with ourselves. So it's so important to have this, the ability to be aware of how language frames every single, not only belief, but my relationship with you.
Yes, yes. I think that's so true. And that's also what I mean, by the way, by this notion of the field intelligence, right? Because the relationship is... It's going to generate, it has its own intelligence, but that intelligence is going to be determined by the way that language is directing our attention, is determining, what comes out, where my attention is drawn to, what the next idea is. And so, yeah, I think language is the universal means by what in the first book, I mentioned what Freud said about language, where he said, language and magic were once one and the same thing, he said, and today that language still has this magical power, and you can create, you can crush people, you can make them feel terrible, you can make them feel wonderful by the way you use language. And I was thinking, by the way, and we mentioned at the very beginning, we talked about Dr. Erickson and the Erickson conference. So every single one of these 14 language patterns, I show how Dr. Erickson used them
in hypnosis.
Language patterns. I have a humorous example of it, a humorous story of how, that's used. So I think that, and Dr. Erickson had a great ability to bring.
Yes.
Where, and usually one of the
for some reason we're getting cut off with some of your wonderful statements,
and that's what makes it funny. It's the way that you're, that the language is directing your attention. So yeah, I think that capacity to again, develop that awareness. And I think you said it well. It's the awareness, okay, what's the language I'm using? What impact is that having on me? And what impact is that having on the way I'm relating with others? And, what's happening for them? then we are sort of, I guess we could say we're in the driver's seat. We're not just being programmed. You know, we are able to, again, coming back to this notion of to choose. I like that, the title of the book you were talking about, the life well lived. I can now live well. I can live my life rather than sort of the programming that I've received.
Yes. And yeah. You also have let me see, it's called the success factor modeling.
Right, success factor modeling, yes.
Yes, and you talk about this notion of the mindset and then action and outcomes.
Right.
And as you were explaining, I also saw that, for example, one of the things that I say to myself that I've learned is when, as I'm going through the thought process, and I hear myself, then I say, is this useful?
Yes.
And is it useful usually has an outcome in mind. Like I have an outcome that it, in the mind. Yes. If I want to create war, coming at it, would it be useful? Yeah. If my intention is creating war, absolutely. being upset and yelling and screaming and, returning the favor of the blame would probably get me to that war.
Right.
But the question of, is this useful?
Yeah.
It becomes an interruption to me. It's almost like you said, taking me from one state to the next state.
Which, yes.
Okay, let's look at, is this useful where for where I want to go, for the future that I want to generate and create? And these types of interruptions, it seems like it shapes the way that we reframe things and then from one layer to another.
Yeah, I think that's really important because this is exactly this notion of outcome frame versus problem frame, right? So if I ask, is it useful? It presupposes that I have some kind of an outcome here, right? It's like, not just that I'm here just being, reacting to what's happening. I have agency. I have an outcome. I have a choice. So if it's useful, notice it's one word, but that word can have so many implications. That's what I mean by that word suddenly reframes everything. If I'm having this argument with somebody and I'm saying something, gosh, is that a useful thing to say? It already takes me to this place of self-awareness that I actually can have an outcome. Is the outcome that I want to
create? Yes.
Such a pivotal thing.
Yes, absolutely. I want everybody to go get this book, Sleight of Mouth 2, How Words Can Change Worlds by Robert Dilts. Anything we haven't shared that you really, really want people to know?
Oh, I think, just that, we can make a difference in our world. I think this is the one thing that is maybe is the one thing I would really want to say, that when we begin to recognize that we do have choice, then we begin to realize that we can, make a difference. We can be a difference that makes a difference. And to me, that sort of has always been what my fundamental sort of purpose, vision has been, is to be able to create a world to which people want to belong. So when I say, words that change worlds, words that create worlds, I want
to be able to create it. I'm sorry that we're keeping.
So that to me is what this book is hopefully giving us the resources to be able to do.
It's all about this. Definitely. You also have workshops. Are those workshops for therapists or coaches or public?
Yeah, for all of the above, depending upon which workshop it is. Some are more for coaches. One of my most recent books is called The Power of Mindset Change, and it's called Why Mindset Matters Most. That's one for coaches. But the sleight of mouth workshops are open to everybody because I think everybody can benefit from it.
Yes.
And
And they can find you at nlpu.com.
Yes.
nlpu.com, and they can find the workshops, not the book, the workshops, and how to contact you. And
yes. Yes.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for taking
You're welcome.
Thank you. All the traveling and work that you do to be with us. Anytime you are available, I love to have you back.
Same here, Fujian. I've always enjoyed our conversations, so I look forward to the next time.
Same here. And for all of you who are out there, create an amazing life for yourself and everyone around you. And until next week, bye.
Are you a psychotherapist looking to enhance your practice? The Awareness Integration Therapy developed by Dr. Fujian Zeng is a comprehensive guide to the principles and techniques of this powerful therapeutic approach. Join the growing community who have elevated their practice and expanded their skills by embracing Awareness Integration Therapy and witnessing its life-changing impact. Order your copy on Amazon now.
Break free from the forces holding you back. Get the life you deserve. Eliminate stress, reduce anxiety, decrease depression, and start living your full potential. Thousands have used Dr. Fujian Zeng's Awareness Integration Theory, an evidence-based behavioral health breakthrough with incredible life-changing results. Getting rid of past trauma, having fulfilling relationships, increasing earnings, and living their best life. Now, the Fujian app is available to everyone. The app is Dr. Fujian Zeng's Awareness Integration Theory in the palm of your hand. Download the Fujian app today.